Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Prague Watch. Tonight, you join us in the far meadow, where the atmosphere is very peaceful and tranquil. Various fish are swimming lazily. And in the distance, formal horses are quietly grazing. Suddenly, the peace is shattered by the arrival of a stampeding herd of Gabriels. And what seems to be a rather oversized tiger moth.
Hello, you fellows! It's Pete Jones from Tiger Moth Tales here. You're listening to Prague Watch with Anthony Rosick. Chocks away!
Well, hello to all my friends out there in Prague Land. This is Big Tony, your host for another exciting edition of Prague Watch. This week I'm finishing up my coverage of the great UK act Pendragon. Pendragon were founded by guitarist, vocalist, and main composer Nick Barrett about 40 years ago, and currently also includes the talents of keyboardist Clive Nolan, who was also a guest on this program recently, as well as the great Peter G on bass and Jan Vincent Velasco on drums. I spoke to Nick Barrett earlier this year and did a part one program back in episode 511. You can find that at progwatch.com, season 5, if you want a refresher. Anyway, since it is the 40th anniversary of the band, and they are planning some special gigs later this year in the UK, I figured I'd spread out my coverage and maybe get some of my UK listeners excited for those gigs. So here we have part two of my Pendragon coverage, and we'll be hearing more from my interview with Nick, as well as plenty of great Pendragon music. I've got 40 great years to draw from, after all. Let's start off the proceedings with some music from the 1991 Pendragon album called The World. From it, I'll be playing part three of the Queen of Hearts suite, which is called The Last Waltz. I'll then roll immediately into Breaking the Spell from the 1993 album, The Window of Life.
Final line upon her lips.
So you can
some Backstreet Boys. I was a 21st century kid, Casanova, with a lover's patch and freestyle charm. We went on and on. Do you remember? Do you recall the smell of school dining halls and Backstreet Boys?
Once again, that was The Last Waltz from Pendragon's 1991 album The World, followed by Breaking the Spell from their 1993 offering, The Window of Life. Now let's listen in on some of my chat with Nick Barrett.
You've touched on why you think you've hung together, you know, as a unit for so many years. Now, what do you think it lies at the heart of your popularity with the audience?
Well, we're not really all that popular.
Well, yeah, you're not doing that either, you know. 40 years, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's been... I think we've been very lucky that... I mean, obviously, in the early days, you know, we went through quite a bit of experimentation trying to find who we were, you know, with the odd dodgy mask and hat and... you know, because that was what people did. But, you know, it wasn't really something we were comfortable with. I think the fact that Pendragon are probably a little bit like Camel in that way, that there's no sort of theatrical front man, which, you know, dressing up, which means that I suppose, you know, we can sort of metamorphosize in some ways, but it's always on a musical basis rather than a visual basis. I think people can get quite possessive about bands that are, you know, very visual. I mean, if you look at sort of Fish or, you know, David Bowie or, you know, Freddie Mercury, you know,
Peter
Peter Gabriel, I mean, a great deal of the personality of the band is within those characters. And we ain't got no personality.
I think just no, by that statement, you're proving that you do.
No, but seriously. no, I mean, I think it's probably, I don't know, look, you know, because we've always sort of just picked up the instruments and played and gone out there and, live-wise, there's a lot of energy in the band. We've never been sort of like shoegazers on stage. I mean, more and more so, I like to talk to the audience, and I think we've created quite a bond with our crowd now. You know, and one of our gigs is, you know, it's real. I mean, every single gig we play, there's never one gig where we don't put in 100%. It's always like this is the last show, so it's got to have everything. And I think that does translate to an audience. It, you know, it spreads as well, because when we played at Sweden Rock, we were sort of sandwiched between a couple of death metal bands. And quite a lot of people, when we went on, as they were walking, because there was three stages going on at once, they, you know, by about halfway, three quarters of the way through the set, our audience in front of us just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And a lot of people who didn't have a clue who we were, but they were sort of interested in the sound and the just the general vibe that the band puts out, because it does have a kind of a something. It has a sort of some way of, you know, people seem to get involved in it, you know, when we play live, and they sort of seem to enjoy it. We had the same thing at Rambling Man as well, that festival in the UK. You know, it's very good.
How about Poland? It seems like you're pretty big in Poland, right?
Yeah, we do well in Poland. I mean, you know, like, we're not massive anywhere. It's not like we play 5,000-seater stadiums, but, you know, we do play 500-seater theatres and sell them out, you know, or sometimes bigger than that, you know, maybe 750 in some places. We do quite well. But Poland, we went to, you know, a few years after the wall came down. And it took us quite a we were told that we had a following over there. We never really knew why. You know, the promoter just contacted us in 1994 and said, look, we want to do some shows. You got an audience over here. And we were thinking, well, have we? You know, because obviously when it was communist, you know, nobody allowed to have any Western culture there whatsoever.
Right.
And nothing came back to us that we had any fans there, because I think if anybody had written to us, their letters would have been interceded by the, the state police there. So they didn't really have a great deal of freedom. So, we were asked to do these concerts, and while we were over there, we did an interview with it's like the biggest radio station in Poland called Warsaw 3, with a guy called Piotr Kaczlowski, and we were talking to him about how we had managed to build up a following in Poland without even knowing it. And he said, it was me. I used to get your records smuggled in underneath lorries, and I play your very early albums on Warsaw 3. And that's how we got known in Poland.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Because when we first went there, I've never seen anything like it. You know, in 1994, the wall had not been long down, and the place was grey, and everybody looked really just worn out. People looked really downtrodden, and they had a hard life. It was quite incredible. It's quite imprinted on my mind. I've never seen such a bleak place.
Yeah, I have kin in Lithuania, so it's the same deal,
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it is Vilnius.
Yeah, I think of how many lives were wasted under that repressive, yoke.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that, nearly 40 million people died under Stalin.
Yeah.
And they should really go and read some Soviet Union history. Which obviously then went on to create the political climate influence it at least for the Cultural Revolution in China. And they believe between 45 and 60 million people died under Mao Zedong. So, yeah, I think sort of when you go and visit a country like that and you see how it is even 3 years, after it's kind of lost its iron curtain shackles, it's just mind-boggling. These kids who turned up at the show, the first show we did, because they got no money. They all had made their own t-shirts. They managed to blag, I guess, a white t-shirt, and they'd written and painted them with Pendragon logos and Pendragon artwork.
Cool.
Every t-shirt completely unique. I wish I had a photo of those t-shirts, because I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And when we played the show, it was like a religious experience. We played three quarters of the show, and the audience were sat down, and we thought it's a little bit polite and a little bit pedestrian. So we invited the audience down to the front of the stage. We tried to kind of encourage them to come and stand at the front. And with a language barrier and the kind of cultural differences, we don't think they quite got the message. They actually all climbed up onto the stage and the security could not stop them. And we just looked at each other and just said, well, let's just play the whole gig all over again. And we just started the whole gig from the beginning, played the whole thing again. And these people, I've never seen such joy on people's faces. It felt like we were the Beatles or something. It was incredible.
It's got to be a special feeling.
Hi, this is Nick Barrett from Pendragon, and you're listening to Prog Watch.
Let's listen to a few more great Pendragon tracks right now. Here's a perennial favorite, Paintbox, from the 1996 classic The Masquerade Overture. I'll follow that immediately with Midnight Running from the same album.
Different parts.
Inspire. I paint the path I want to take and paint a life for the needles in your head. The spotlight's flashing, frozen in your tracks, and you're just playing dead. You know, you gotta go. Make a break for the border, make the break of a life. Take your sons and daughters, keep them safe right under your wing. Throw your past behind you, put history to the knife. Driving you insane. Where are you?
Again, that was Paint Box and then Midnight Running, both from the 1996 Pendragon album, The Masquerade Overture. Let's hear one more before we get into some more of the interview. This one is If I Were the Wind and You Were the Rain, from the 2001 album, Not of This World.
The blue is from these two worlds.
If I Were the Wind and You Were the Rain, from the first Pendragon album of this present century, called Not of This World. Now let's hear some more of my interview with Mr. Nick Barrett.
I've often wondered, you know, what do you ever get sick of playing, you know,
if you're a certain performer who you know, you have to play the hit every time, or they're like, yes, they have to play Owner of a Lonely Heart. You know, do they get sick of it?
Well,
you know?
Well, you know, we're kind of lucky that we never had any hits.
but is there anything in your repertoire that like people have come to expect, and where it's like, oh, do we really have to play this again, or have you never ever had that feeling?
No, we had it a little bit in the 80s. I mean, we gigged an awful lot in those days. You know, I mean, we gig now. We sort of tend to do tours or slightly bigger one-offs. So, you know, we don't really have a chance to become bored of it. But, you know, in the early days, we were just playing as many shows as we could. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of shows. And, you know, some of the material from the Jewel album, I mean, me and Clive got cheesed off with playing the Black Knight, and Peter nearly threatened to leave if we played Leviathan one more time. So, you know, kind of, it does get wearing. But weirdly enough, some of the stuff that is, you know, 20 years old now is just still loads of fun to play. I mean, I still love playing Paintbox. I still love playing Masters of Illusion. You know, got an absolutely, and stuff earlier than that from the World album, you know, got absolutely no problems to play. It kind of adopts a new energy. I think some of the really older stuff we got tired of because we played it a lot. But, you know, once we'd started to do more tours and less just gigging all the time, you know, it made it a little bit more special.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is next for Pendragon?
Well,
you've got the 40-year thing coming up, you know, a new album. You were talking a bit about that, right?
Yeah. In terms of the future, really, I mean, the best thing that you can ever really hope for is, you know, people say, oh, you know, we got a DVD coming out, we got a tour, and we got a gig, and we got a new album, and then you got a book. And, you know, it's not really about that sort of linear way of thinking, I think. You know, when you're, and I've realized this now, is the joy is in, there's two things. One of them is making records, and the other one is playing live. I mean, everything else is pretty well, you know, just a sort of an add-on, and you can lose yourself in both those things. And I would be perfectly happy, I'd be really happy if we could carry on making new music, you know, regularly. And I'd be happy if we could carry on playing live concerts, you know, regularly as well, because, you know, I think, the live gigs have got a lot better. You know, we've learned our craft very much. We've improved a lot of things, you know. I mean, you know, it's sort of sometimes it's varied where, you know, you think you've got a sound engineer, but he's not really that into what you're doing. So, you know, maybe lasts a year or something and then he's gone. But we now have a sound engineer who's absolutely incredible. We've got a lighting engineer who's absolutely incredible. We got a drummer who is absolutely incredible. And me, Peter, and Clive are also incredible.
Yes.
No.
We've got a
very happy situation now. And, you know, we got a couple of girl backing vocalists. And it just makes it feel very complete. Everybody gets on very well. You know, it's a happy place to be now. And it would be really great if we can carry on with that sort of scenario. And in terms of making music, you know, for the next album, I feel in a way I'm kind of going backwards. Have I sort of done the metal thing? Maybe. I've sort of got that out of my system, I think. That's not to say, you know, it's a tool in the toolbox now. It may be something that kind of rears its head. I've got a couple of riffs on the next album which might be incorporated into some songs. I don't know. It depends how it affects the flow of the album. But, you know, I really want to try something atmospheric, something a little bit more insular, a little bit more melodic, and you know, maybe a little bit more retro. Some acoustic guitar, some old keyboard sounds. I'm approaching the whole album with very much an analog approach in mind. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, all this was kicked off a new way of looking at things by, I was listening to a Deep Purple album, and I thought, it's incredible how much Ian Gillan sounds like Ian Gillan. And Richie Blackmore sounds very much like Richie Blackmore. The personality just really came out of those records, and I thought, you know, a lot of music's lost that. I mean, you can have a great sounding band, rock band now, but you haven't got a clue who they are. You know, they sound like all the other vocalists sound like that. The guitarists sound fantastic. The production sounds fantastic and it's really clean. And I'm thinking, what happened to that old personality? I mean, you know, some people will say, you know, it's got to be pristine and it's got to be fantastic and you've got to have a great sounding vocal. And I think, well, hang on a minute. You know, like Bob Dylan was extremely popular, you know, because he had a message and a way of making albums, and he had a certain kind of voice, and it was real, and it just had a lot of personality. And I find that about a lot of albums of the 70s, you know, they've got that, and I don't hear it so much nowadays.
Everything seems cookie cutter today to me. It just, there's trends go through, and it's like, oh, well, my wife will listen to pop radio, you know, I suffer through it when, you know, on a few occasions when she's listening. I really can't take it because it just all sounds the same. All the female singers sound the same. The trend is over here. I guess artists aren't big enough to sell a song on their own, so they're always pairing up some singer with some rapper. You know, that's a formula. There was a little thing that went through. Some hit had a trumpet on it, so now you hear a bunch of songs that have trumpets on them, you know, and I can't stand it, really. It's so safe and so cookie cutter.
Don't go anywhere. Prog Watch will be right back.
Let's do a few more Pendragon tunes before finishing up the interview with Nick Barrett. First up, I'm going to play a song called The Freak Show from the 2008 album Pure. I'll follow that immediately with Faces of Light from their 2014 album Men Who Climb Mountains. We'll be right back.
a free ride. Quite the opposite, in fact. It's just that I wanna be true to myself, keep my dreams intact. Don't want people to see the freak show go.
You won't always have to roll your stone up that hill. You might turn a corner to something new, and all the voices in your head become still. All your trials and tribulations mean something now. They'll wipe the sweat from your brow.
Again, that was The Freak Show from the Pendragon album Pure, and Faces of Light from Men Who Climb Mountains. Now let's hear Nick's perception of the current state of progressive rock, and we'll roll on from that into drummers and the genius of Phil Collins.
The same thing has sort of happened in prog rock a little bit as well. You know, where the sound has become too overproduced in a way. It's just not cranky enough in some ways. It's kind of hard to describe it without it sounding, you know, I don't mean I want it to sound really rough, but I want, you know, everything gets put through auto-tune, everything gets put through Beat Detective or something similar to that now. You know, the emphasis is on the accuracy, the science, rather than the emotion and the intuition of it. You know, it just seems like it needs a little bit of, I mean, I think some of the you know, music of bands like Nirvana or you know, that sort of thing, or some of the stuff David Grohl's doing, you know, does have that. You know, he's managed to keep that sort of live personality in the whole thing, and you know, I can kind of take a nod towards that kind of approach. I think it's great.
Yeah. When it comes to like drumming, yeah, I mean, there's, especially drumming, there's drummers that made, you know, I mean, there's a feel when a drummer's behind the beat, you know, it makes it feel heavy, you know, it can anyway. I think John Bonham was behind the beat most of the time, you know? So yeah, if you start putting it on the metronome and everything's right on the beat, ZZ Top was another band, I think, you know, there was this sloppy, loose kind of thing to the rhythm section until they got to that eliminator when they started using the drum machine, and everything, ta-da-dum, ta-dum, ta-dum, you know, and it kind of lost something there, you know, the personality that there was, like, that sloppy looseness was kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, in the sound in John Bonham as well, you know, because of that sort of ambient, you know, bass drum and tom, ambient whole kit type of approach.
Yeah, putting them in the stone stairwell or whatever they did, you know, that Page did the recording.
It always sounds kind of lagging a little bit, but, yeah. You know, they don't have a lot of musicians. You know, John Bonham can afford to fill up the sound, you know, so it takes up a lot of, you know, frequencies, big wall of sound, and, you know, what a sound it was.
Yeah, it was. Never be another.
But I find the same thing with Phil Collins as well, you know, on stuff like Trick of the Tail, when he used concert toms instead of double-headed toms. You know, you got that very kind of open, crazy sound, you know, which he kept going for a long, long time. And, you know, I felt that gave his drums an awful lot of personality, whereas, you know, if you heard Phil Collins drumming, you know it was Phil Collins.
You sure did. And for a while there, he was on everything. in the mid-80s, yeah. he was like a workaholic.
Yeah, but I love his drumming.
Oh, know? I do, like, too.
Yeah. He had a great feel. I mean, even on the late stuff, like, I mean, some of that stuff on No Son of Mine is just fantastic. It's just got such a good feel to it, you know. Yeah, I'll always really like his drumming.
Yeah, I put him up in my top five for sure, you know, Phil Collins. Yeah, I don't think he gets enough praise as a drummer, you know.
No, I don't think he does. I think probably because, and this is a good thing in a way, is that he used to approach the songs from a song point of view, rather than, you know, which is great because it means he's really involved in, you know, what the whole band are doing. I mean, I found quite a lot of times for drummers, you know, if they don't like, if they feel that the drum pattern that you're asking them to do to go with the song is too simple. They just don't like it. You know, and we always used to have this joke that, you know, maybe we'll just do one mix of the album for the drummer, which has just got the drums, because they don't want to hear all that other stuff. They don't want to be bothered with keyboards and guitars.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think, you know, with Phil Collins, he latched very much to what the song needed, you know, and that was kind of rare.
Well, he was super inventive, though, even in that context. You know, he did, like you say, he delivered what was needed, but he was very inventive, you know. I played drums myself, you know. I mean, I definitely admire him a lot just for what he did. And it took me forever to even try to figure out what he was doing in Apocalypse in 9/8. I start to lose it, you know, when you start doing 9/8, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely underappreciated. Well, yeah, his praises aren't sung as loudly as they should be, drummer. Opinion.
Well, I think as all round, I mean, you know, you get this sort of thing. You know, it's really weird. You get this thing from people who say that, you know, this person or that person, you know, they're an absolute genius. And yet, Phil Collins, you know, was a great producer. He was a great drummer. He was a great singer. He was a great songwriter. Mm-hmm. He was a great aura. And he really, you know, stayed a long course within music, and created a lot of different styles of, and wrote a lot of different styles of music. And, you know, you never hear anybody say he's a genius. I think there's a reason for that. And I've started to think this more and more. This is more of like one of my political social things that I've got, is that I think the more miserable and grumpy the person is, the more likely they get called genius.
Phil was just too likable and off-putting by his nice personality, huh?
Yeah, he's just too much of a fun guy.
Yeah.
He's just shot himself in the foot.
At least, you know, he's...
And yet people are kind of like very aloof and very serious. You know, if they had done the same things as Phil Collins, had the same abilities, oh man, he's a genius.
I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah, it's weird. You look at next time someone says, "Oh yeah, they're a genius," you think, "Yeah, they're a pretty serious guy."
Yeah, yeah. But who had more fun? Probably Phil Collins.
Yeah.
Let's finish the musical portion of the program with another song from the most recent Pendragon studio album, "Men Who Climb Mountains." This is "Faces of Darkness."
Thank you.
Once again, that was Faces of Darkness from the 2014 Pendragon album, Men Who Climb Mountains. So I hope you enjoyed this program centered on Nick Barrett and Pendragon. Nick was a great interview, and I'd like to thank him once again for appearing on the program. Also, thanks again to Rob Fisher for getting us together and suggesting a few of the questions. If you are in the UK, don't forget to look for those special Pendragon 40th anniversary gigs coming up soon. If you liked this program and missed part one and want to hear most of what Nick and I talked about, and we did talk about many different subjects, make sure to check out ProgWatch 511. You can find it at progwatch.com. That's P-R-O-G-W-A-T-C-H, all one word, .com. You'll find it in Season 5. If you do visit progwatch.com, why not drive around a little while you're there? I've had a lot of great guests and played a lot of great music over the 5 years I've been doing this, and you can peruse the individual seasons or search for a particular artist at the top of the homepage using the search function. It's a little magnifying glass. You can also listen to any episode, subscribe to the podcast, find me on social media, email me, or maybe even support the show if you listen regularly and feel the program has some value to you. So until next time, please be good to each other. And prog on, my brothers and sisters.
Often ask me, they say, Arnold, how did you get to be the ultimate alpha male? And I tell them there are four things you must remember. Four things. Number one, you need to pump plenty of iron in the gym. Number two, you need to have plenty of protein and amino acids in your diet. Number three, you need to stay properly hydrated. And number four, you need a steady diet of progressive rock and roll, which you can hear on Prog Watch, hosted by my friend, Big Tony. Progressive rock and roll. I think you will like it.